Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Hello, and welcome to Leap of Faith, the program where we talk with people about their spiritual journeys in order to gain insight and inspiration on our own spiritual journeys. I'm your host, Penina Taylor, and today I'm interviewing someone with an incredibly inspiring story that I'm really excited to share with you. A lot of people think that Judaism teaches that there is no more prophecy today, that God has stopped speaking to people in the world, but that's not quite true. Judaism doesn't teach that God has stopped speaking, but rather that there are no longer any prophets. The people today do not have a level of spiritual connection to God to be able to be prophets. Now, one of my Jewish studies professors explained it like a radio broadcast. He said God is still broadcasting his word, his will, into the world. He hasn't stopped speaking. But most of us have no clue what frequency he's broadcasting on, and so we're incapable of tuning into that transmission. But every once in a while, someone happens to accidentally tune into the right frequency and picks up on that transmission. We recognize this idea in the saying that God gives new parents a small piece of prophecy when naming their children, for example. And I believe that there are other times too. It's those moments when you have absolute clarity that something is totally the right thing to do. Have you ever experienced that? I know I have. You're walking down the street, and maybe somebody asks you for charity. I know that in Jerusalem, for example, we have people always asking us for charity, and sometimes you get a little annoyed. Sometimes you're happy to give, but every once in a while, you get this feeling that you must give to this person. You have one of those moments of certainty that this is the right thing to do. Now, obviously, I can give you other examples as well of times when you just have absolute clarity about a particular thing. You know it's right. Well, today, our guest is going to share with us a journey that took him to that moment. The moment when he knew with absolute certainty that the synagogue was home. And he said, "This is where I belong." When we come back from the break, a story you won't want to miss. I'm Penina Taylor. You're listening to Leap of Faith, and we'll be right back.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Hello, and welcome back to Leap of Faith. I'm Penina Taylor, and today I am speaking with Yosef Juarez, who is an incredible person with an incredible story to share with us today. Welcome, Yosef.
Thank you very much for having me, Penina.
It's an absolute pleasure. The first time we met, I had the honor of hearing your story, and I'm very excited to share it with our listeners today. So, Yosef, you have a little bit of a different background than many of my guests. You were not born in the United States, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so why don't we start out with where you grew up and kind of what kind of an upbringing you had?
Sure. I was born in Honduras. That's in Central America. Most people think that that's somewhere in Mexico. And I was born to a Christian family. Interestingly enough, my family claimed to be Catholic, but they never really practiced much. just a little background about like dynamics of my family, just give you a little more information. Yeah. We lived in a street where basically my whole family lived there. It was like six houses in a row, you know, your typical barrio, you know, as you would imagine from a, you know, Latin American country, where my family had a restaurant and aunts basically could, they need a telephone to like call each other, you know, they'd yell from one house to the next and they had a telephone connection. So it's a very big, very large family and very close. They're very together family. So of course, everything that, if you try to do something new, like immediately you have many, many opinions. So like I said, that predominantly the bigger part of my family is Catholic, but they didn't really go to church. They didn't really practice anything. It's just sort of like something that they said they were. And really my mother was the first one who changed that when she was expecting to have me. I'm the firstborn. She started going to an evangelical church. Oh my God, big deal for the family. Like, this is what I call it, you know, like they say in Judaism, going off the derech, you know,
right.
And into like something completely different. So even though they didn't practice anything, they had opinions about becoming evangelical. They were the crazy ones, you know,
like, right.
So my mother, like, she says that she used to walk by down the street, you know, to on the way to church, and you know, my uncles would be sitting outside in a rocking chair. Where are you going? And I'm going to church every week. The same question. You know, why are you going to church? It's like, why you got to do that? And you know, always giving her a hard time for becoming evangelical and for even making the religion a real thing. As a result, when I was born, my mother was a born again evangelical Christian, and I was born to a observant Christian home.
Now, what about your father? Where was your father in all of this? Did he kind of come along with your mom?
Yeah, great question. So my father historically had a certain position about religion, and that is he believes there's a God. He believes that he has his own relationship with God that doesn't require him to be part of any church or any congregation. And that's it. You know, he was encouraging that we should participate and go to church because he saw the value in it, but he never, like, you couldn't get him to step foot, you know, in a church. It's okay. He was going to melt.
Right.
So he's definitely part of the story, but I could say very much so that my mother was the big spiritual guide throughout my life, which is why she comes into the picture a lot.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, like I said, I'm the oldest of four and two brothers and a sister. And, you know, our story was very unique in the sense that we ended up coming to the United States by nothing short of miracles, you know, and which I'll get to. But also, when I was 3 years old, I fell from the second story of my house.
Oh, no.
And I cracked my skull. You know, 3 years old, right?
Uh-huh.
As you can imagine, zoning laws are not the same. The building code laws are not the same in Honduras as they would be. So this is 1987 in a third world country where they don't have the technology to deal with such a head injury. So, you know, my mother took me to the doctor and they did some x-rays and they saw there was a fracture. And immediately the local doctor said, you know, we lived in a city called La Ceiba. It's a port city, beautiful city. This doctor said, you know, you have to take him to the capital of the country because they might be somebody who's more experienced, or they may have better technology to deal with this head injury. So we made the trip out there, and my mother tells me that I didn't move. I was like very much low energy, and she was very worried. We got to the capital. Of course, doctors don't trust any other doctor's diagnostics, so they ran x-rays again. And she said that by the time I was in the hospital room, it took a while before the doctor came to see us, that like I was jumping around like any other kid.
Wow.
And she's like, what's going on here? The doctor's like, that's the fracture, kid. There's no way. You know, we do x-rays and all kinds of things. And when they came back into the room, they were astonished to compare the x-rays that were taken just like 7 hours earlier and to the new x-rays. One showed a fracture, the other one didn't show a fracture. So nobody ever operated on my head. It was deemed to be some sort of miracle. Okay. And as a result, my family became even more religious, even more committed to religion, including that made a lot of uncles, you know, as well. So fast forward, when we become 8 years old, you know, getting visas to the United States is not a simple thing from a third world country, especially Honduras. My mother was amongst a lot of people who traveled to the capital to ask for visas, and she was the only one who walked away with visas, even though she had four children, and my father was actually already in the United States.
I take it that you guys were emigrating for financial reasons?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the reason that we were immigrating was because there was literally a famine. Like there was, what happened was that the currency got devalued and there was inflation and there was turmoil in the country. We didn't have much access to food. And I remember those times. I remember that like my mother was very worried. And again, you know, my father immigrated to the United States first. And then we looked to go there as well. We went to ask for visas. And but then again, they still weren't just like opening the doors. You know, it's still, you required a lot of pulling of strings, and you know, you had to show that you weren't going to just go stay there, you know. So when I'm 8 years old, we get our visas to the United States, and as you can imagine, super strong every Sunday going to church, and I would say the church was like the big central point of my life. And what kept, interestingly enough, you know, religion in a third world country, it's what keeps people like from losing hope, really, in with difficult situations like crime and drugs and all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. I think that it's different than like in the United States. Sometimes it can be a little bit different. What I'm trying to say, it's more of an essential part of life. It's integrated a little bit more in a place where you're exposed to such difficult situations.
Right.
So again, at the age of 8 years old, we got visas to come to Houston, where my father was, and when we had more family, and we immigrated to Houston. And of course, the first thing that my mother wanted to do was find a church. So she started looking, and again, she felt like she didn't feel as connected in places that she went to, like back in Honduras, for the reasons that I mentioned. It's a very different environment, a very different reason. Like it's sort of like religion didn't come into the home so much. Interestingly enough, the church that we went to in Honduras had branches in the United States, and through coincidence, my mother ended up finding another family from Honduras that used to be part of the same church that she was in Honduras, and they said, you know what, if we can't find one, let's make one. So they got together and they contacted this mega church that was having a conference in Miami, and they said, you know what, we'd like to start a branch of the church in Houston. And they're like, well, what army do you have? You know, like how many people are you? You know, do you have money or do you have an army? Well, one of the two things. If you have money, we figure it out. So basically they didn't give us money, they didn't, you know, pay too much attention. And you know, they kept at it. They kept asking, they kept pushing, you know, through different channels. So finally they're like, you know what, let's humor these people. Let's send someone out there just to say that we looked into it. And they sent it over a guy by the name of Hector Flores, who was not a minister. He was sort of like a leader, a cell group leader, somebody who was influential in his own community, but not necessarily had any intentions of becoming a minister. So Minister Flores, or at this point, just Hector Flores, came down and he saw, you know, what were like, what, 10 people, men, women, and children, sitting in a garage with a guitar. very humble beginnings with all the passion and all the hunger in the world to like create something. And he fell in love with the people, you know, him and his wife fell in love with the people. And he decided, you know what, I don't know, like, I think this could work. You know, I'm not exactly sure how that conversation went. You know, I was, you know, 9 years old at the time, but he ended up staying. And this small cell group turned into basically a 300 family church in the Houston area that was split. Basically, one met on Saturday and one met on Sunday. So it was extremely successful. This happened over a period of 10 years.
Okay, wow, that's really interesting. Unfortunately, I have to ask you to stop right now. I hate to stop you in the middle of such an interesting story and you're only getting started, but we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear more of Yosef's incredibly inspiring story. You're listening to Leap of Faith. I'm Penina Taylor, and we'll be right back.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Hi, and welcome back to the second segment of Leap of Faith. I'm your host, Penina Taylor, and today I'm speaking with Yosef Juarez, who before the break was telling us about his family's part in helping to found a church in the Houston, Texas area with a pastor named Hector Flores. And I'm assuming, Yosef, that the reason that you're mentioning his name is that this has some significance in this next part of the story.
100%.
Okay, take it. Take it from there.
Okay, so we went from this cell group that was meeting in a garage, 10 or 11 people, men, women, and children, to a church with two branches that together had about 300 families. And this took place over a course of 10 years. Clearly, we were an evangelical church, which means we went out to the streets to proselytize. And the church was worked in the format of cell groups. It was very much around, you know, bringing people to different neighborhoods and creating an environment that was friendly for families and children. A few interesting things about our church was that Minister Flores himself had a unique story as well. Before he became a minister, when he was a little bit younger, he was a medical student, and while he was studying the cell structure of cancer cells, he saw that he had what looked like a tumor. He cultured it and diagnosed himself with terminal cancer.
Wow.
And he was told to go to the United States for treatment. And when he got to the United States, he was told that he had only a few weeks left because it had gotten into the bone or something. And again, similar to my story, he never lost faith. Like, he always had a positive attitude according to the people around him. And he recovered from it fully without treatment. It just went away. So as a result, you know, he was a person who had a very strong belief in God, which went beyond just, so to speak, that leap of faith. Like, I think that I can relate to the same notion. I remember that because of my story, my mother told me, you know, the reason that your life was spared is because you're meant to do something. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a plan, there's a mission God has for you. And I remember just growing up thinking, there's a God, and there's something I'm supposed to do. And I don't know what that is, but one day I'm going to find out. So similarly, Minister Flores was a very driven person, very very much of a truth seeker. He wasn't interested in just having a church that was sort of like a doctrine to keep people happy, but he wanted to get to the truth. He was passionate about finding answers to the tough questions. So that was his method of teaching, which was very much something that people loved about him and a reason why the church was able to grow. It was something that was very real to many people. In addition to that, we had very interesting customs, which I'm not sure that many other churches had, or at least at the time. One of those was that we mimicked the Shalosh Regalim of the Torah, the pilgrimages to the temple, the holidays, three times a year. We'd come and we'd have what we called a festival of consecration, where the cell groups would all come and do fundraisers throughout a period of time, and then, you know, consecrate the money that they raised. And then you would go up after the cell groups, then you would go up as an individual. It was a very interesting thing, and very much as a memory to what would happen at the temple. And it would end with a meal, you know. So it was something very, very different, very unique. Tithing was a big deal. And also we had Bible study programs called discipleship, where it allowed people to go through a training program to become a leader in the church. And it's really, it was a very well-oiled machine. So what I'm trying to explain, that it was something that was very unique, and there was a very strong brotherhood amongst the people who were a part of it. And it was a very, very successful church. So what happened, right?
Yeah.
So essentially, you know, I mentioned Minister Flores was very much of a truth seeker. So he was always interested in learning, looking into difficult questions. And he came up with a question. You know, he knew that the Torah was given to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai, and that the Jewish people are the chosen people. And so his question is, how come the Torah was written in Hebrew and the New Testament was written in Greek? Why the change? If it was written by the same God, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, then why would there be a change? And so he thought, you know, there's going to be a wonderful answer, and he's going to have a nice sermon the next week. So his big discovery, you know, basically what happened was somebody gave him a New Testament in Greek, which is, it's out of print, basically. It was a special edition book that someone gave him as a gift. And he printed himself a Greek, ancient Greek alphabet. And he wanted to look up verses that he remembered. And he wanted to, you know, try to draw conclusions and to see what, you know, to see what he would find. Another big part leading up to this, to the discovery, was the understanding that, or at least the Christian understanding, that when the Jews build the golden calf after the Torah was given, Hashem tells Moshe, I'm going to wipe them out, step aside, I'm going to let me wipe them out. And they go back and forth, and ultimately Moses convinces Hashem not to, you know, not to destroy the Jewish people. But there's a verse that says that now I'm not going to be the one leading the Jewish people. I'm going to send an angel in front of you. And this angel's it's sort of as a punishment, like you're no longer going to have that direct connection. There's going to be an angel that's going to be sent in front of you. And so we always learned that new leader was Yashka, you know, from the New Testament. And
like a Christophany, like an appearance of him.
Yeah. Like sort of like, here's the hint that there's a need for a New Testament, right? That there's, but what nobody ever teaches you, because we learn it out of sequence and, you know, Christianity, is that and Moses says, no, like you have to lead us, like, and he begs, and this is where we learn the whole service of Yom Kippur, right? The 13 attributes of God, you know, where, you know, we ask for forgiveness and that we can come back. And basically Hashem continues to be their leader. But that was in the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu dies, then the next generation, you know, being led by Joshua, the pasuk says he's standing in the field about to take on in battle, and he sees a man standing with a sword, and he goes up to him and says, "And who are you?" And he says, "Now I have come." What do you mean, now you have come? When were you supposed to come? And it's like he was this angel was the angel, the archangel, you know, who would lead the Jewish people in war. And like before, Hashem was the one who would go out in battle because of the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu. But now that there was a difference in connection between Joshua and Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously, now the angel was the one who was in place. So this is the angel that the verse was talking about. But we understood it back then that it meant that there should be a New Testament, that there should be, that the punishment of the golden calf was that the Torah was abolished, and that you needed a new covenant. So putting that into perspective, now we can understand, go through the story of how, you know, Minister Flores, what he discovered, having that in his mind. And he wanted to know a very simple thing. which is, you know, he understood that Hashem has 72 names in Hebrew. And he wanted to know which one of those names was the name that ultimately got translated into the New Testament. And he wanted to draw a connection between that emanation of Hashem, that expression of Hashem, and the New Covenant. So to his big surprise, what he found in the Greek New Testament was that none of the names of Hashem in Hebrew was there, but Zeus, pagan Greek mythology, Zeus was there.
So you're saying that the name Zeus appears in the Greek New Testament?
Correct. As God, as Hashem, as God the Father, it's Zeus. And now you understand in the concept of the Trinity, so Jesus or Jesus mm-hmm. is the Son. And if you look at it in the Greek New Testament, there's a word, there's a letter, this is a grammar thing, there's a letter that goes in front of the name that sort of shows a diminutive of a bigger source. Now, so that's already a grammar situation, like showing, connecting Jesus to Zeus, pagan Greek mythology, Zeus. Now, to every Christian in the world, like Greek mythology is paganism.
Right.
You don't have to be, you know, a Jew to understand this. So, you know, this is a big red flag. Then you look at the fact, you know, if you look at stories like Hercules, where, you know, the father was Zeus and the mother was a virgin, and you realize that this is something that happens over and over again in Greek mythology, you understand that the story of Jesus and the whole concept of a, what is it called? The
Immaculate Conception.
That, thank you. Immaculate Conception. I was like, what is it called again? The Immaculate Conception is not such a like nuance. It's something that happened in Greek mythology over and over again. And if you continue reading in the Greek New Testament, you're going to find other gods. You're going to find the names of other Greek Hellenist gods. So this was a shocker, you know. And of course, the first question that he had is like, this can't be true. Like, it has to be that this is a mistake. It could be. So the first thing you want to try to do is justify it. You know, right. It could be that Zeus is just, there's no other way in Greek to say God except for Zeus, because that was their, like, the biggest god of, you know, in Greek mythology.
Okay, Yosef, I have to stop you because we have to go to a break. We are at an incredible point in the story. Minister Flores's whole belief system is just turned completely upside down. And when we come back, you're going to tell us how that affected your life. I want to thank you for listening to Leap of Faith. I'm Penina Taylor, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentico, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
Hi, and welcome back to the last segment of today's Leap of Faith. I'm your host, Penina Taylor, and today I'm speaking with Yosef Juarez, who has an incredibly inspirational story. When we left at the break, he was telling us about how the pastor of his church, Minister Flores, had made an incredible discovery of a connection between Greek mythology and the Greek New Testament, which completely turned his world upside down. Okay, Yosef, why don't you continue from there?
Sure. So, of course, you know, upon finding this shocking discovery, the first thing you want to do, you know, you're the leader of two congregations, is try to figure out a way how you're learning it wrong and try to dismiss it, you know. So he basically, the first question he had is, you know, maybe this is an etymological type of circumstance, you know. It could be that the only way to say God in Greek is Zeus, because Zeus was the head god in Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. And it could be that translated into the language, that came into the language. So he called up Greek professors at university that taught Greek studies and did research. And his research came back that there was a way to say God in Greek, and that is Deus. So this was referring to Greek mythology, pagan Zeus. So now he was faced with, what do I do now? So he calls up colleagues, and these colleagues tell him, why are you digging into this? Close the book. You have a nice congregation. It's very successful. You make good money. They're very you're very influential. Like, what are you causing trouble for yourself? So he realized that some did not know anything. Some knew and chose to hide the truth, which shocked him, especially friends. And others were just oblivious to it and literally had never asked this question or didn't know anything about it. So he tried to contact a few rabbis, and of course they thought like he was crazy, or I don't know, they didn't give him much attention, until there was one rabbi who is part of Chabad, who has a mission to spread, you know, the seven laws of Bnei Noach to the nations. And mm-hmm. So he saw it as a mission to be able to clarify this, you know, for him, which brought things in perspective even more. And all I remember is that the next Sunday, everything changed.
Wow.
You know, I was part of the choir. I was the head of a cell group. Church was my life. And we used to get to church an hour early for choir practice. And I remember that he was like a zombie. Something changed. And he had already gone through all the songs and removed every song that had the name Jesus on it.
Wow.
He really stopped talking about the New Testament and started speaking a lot more about the Torah and the Old Testament. And nobody really knew what was going on. During the next few weeks, he spoke to the leadership of the church, and they concurred with him that what he had found was real, and he didn't know what to do.
Wow, that's a surprise. You would think that they would have voted to oust him or something, right?
Right. This goes to show you how much they trusted him and how much there was a close connection between the leaders of the church and him. These were people whose families he helped take from the streets and integrate into this organization, and they trusted him fully. I think one of his greatest attributes or qualities is that he can't lie to you. He always tells you how it is, whether you want to hear it or not. So he has this quality. So people trusted him for that reason. So he ended up reaching out to the rabbi that helped him originally and put him in touch with somebody else. He wanted to convert to Judaism. He just didn't know what to do with his congregation. So in the meantime, we started learning a lot more about the Torah. My mother comes back into the picture. She loves to read. We started going to a Jewish bookstore. She picks up Aryeh Kaplan's The Real Messiah, which debunks Christianity. She reads it, and she comes to me. I'm 19 years old at this point. And she tells me, Jesus is not God. And I've always been very respectful to my mother, but this really upset me. And I pointed my finger at her, and I said, how could you say such a thing? You know, giving my story and everything that happened, you know, just the journey that we have, to say something so outrageous just because you read a book, it can't be like it. You could be insulting God. It's sort of what I told her, and I walked out. So one of the cultural things that our church had was that every Sunday after church, we'd go play soccer in the park, being a very Spanish church. So the minister was out there running. Everybody's, you know, playing soccer. The ladies were cooking a barbecue. And then we would have our halftime huddle, where he would give his small sermon, you know, the halftime break. And as he's about to begin, the Sunday after my mother confronted me with what she learned, she takes out the book and says, you know what, it's time for everyone to know the truth right now. And she tells him, tell us everything you know. She shows him the book, and he, at that point, is like, he has to come clean in front of the entire church.
Right.
And they didn't leave the park till 11 o'clock that night. You know, that halftime huddle took, you know, turned into 4 or 5 hours of people crying, feeling cheated that they had dedicated their lives to this, and feeling like almost like they were told their parent was not their parents. It was a very devastating situation for them. So he started going to a synagogue, and through telephone connection, he told one person, you know, don't tell anybody, but I'm going to a synagogue. I want to convert to Judaism. They told their one good friend, and their one good friend told their one good friend, and then everybody was coming, and nobody knew that anybody else was coming. So we crashed a synagogue on a Shabbat morning.
How many people?
About 50 people.
So 50 some odd Spanish speaking non-Jewish people show up on Shabbat morning at an Orthodox synagogue. Wow, what a scene.
Yes, and everybody was shocked because nobody knew that anybody else was coming. Neither did Minister Flores. So he's like, we can't do this. We can't crash with all these people. And basically this is where we turn to him and say, if this is where you're going, if this is good enough for you, then it's good enough for us. Like, you can't stop us. We're coming in with you, you know?
Wow.
So we get into this synagogue. And of course, we're early because we show up to church early. You know, and to our big surprise, there's a gigantic wall in the middle of the room. And there's these funny little hats that are being passed around to the men. The gabbai is there. And he's like, well, you know, when you see a church coming in dressed up in their Sunday best. We fill up the back 4 or 5 rows of the church, of the synagogue, and the shocker of every Jew that walks through the door on that Shabbat morning, you know, to see a church sitting in the back of the shul. They're like, Mashiach came, you know, something's going on, you know. And I always say Hashem has a sense of humor. There was a bat mitzvah that Shabbos. So they just thought, you know, the reason we didn't get kicked out is because they thought that the Baal HaBayis must have a lot of, you know, Goyish friend that he's inviting to. You know, he invited his whole office or something.
Uh-huh.
That's the reason why nobody really told us much other than just passed, you know, segregated us, you know, men and women. And so that was a unique experience, 3 hours of Hebrew, which was like Chinese to us at the time.
Sure.
And I remember the moment when the Torah came out, and that was a very spiritual moment that I didn't even know what it was at that moment. All I knew is that there was a connection at that point. And I knew then that I was home. Mm. I knew then. This was the place where I belong. And what ended up happening is 3.5 years later, after learning, I converted, and about 10 others from the entire church converted, including Minister Flores and his wife. And 6 months after my conversion, I found myself studying yeshiva in Israel. I overheard in the lobby somebody saying there was such a thing as a free trip to Israel. And I Googled that, and I got Birthright. So I went on Aish Birthright. That turned into yeshiva and a long, you know, at this point, it's been a 13-year journey into Judaism. Obviously, you know, not everybody converted. Something that's a very big misconception, you'll see my story in different places. They talk about a conversion en masse. There's no such thing.
Right.
It was an individual process. You know, the synagogue, everybody was in shock for years, you know, to see what had happened. And, you know, slowly every family has to decide what they're going to do and make their own evaluation. And at the end of the day, the rabbis have to make a decision on it. And you know, thank God, you know, that to me, again, I connected it to my mission. I knew that there was something I was supposed to do. And when I felt the connection that I felt at the synagogue, I knew that I was home. I knew that this was the next path. This was the next chapter of that mission. And I've been pursuing it ever since.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you so much for sharing your incredible story. I know that there is a whole lot that you had to leave out, but we are out of time. I just want to ask you if there's any last words that you would like to say to someone maybe who is searching for the truth and is wondering about the New Testament.
So what I would like to say is the most important thing in this entire process that I've learned is that basically there's a lot of sources, there's a lot of content online, and there's a lot of people with different ideas. I think that the most important part is that you have to find a rabbi that can lead you through the process and be faithful to that process. They're going to be the ones to tell you what to do next. And, you know, it's always very nice to learn, you know, all kinds of interesting things that are out there, but not everything is right at the beginning of the process, or sometimes it's not even accurate. So it's very important to have a good leader or good mentor through this process. So right. Find the rabbi.
That's fantastic. And I'm assuming that if somebody wanted to contact you because they identify with some part of your story or they'd like help finding a reliable rabbi to be put in contact with, that they could contact you?
Sure, absolutely.
What's the best way to get in touch with you?
So the best way to get in touch with me would be email, Yosef Juarez, it's Y-O-S-E-F Juarez, J-U-A-R-E-Z, the number 84, at gmail.com. Yosef Juarez, 84, at gmail.com.
Wow, fantastic. Well, we are out of time today. I want to thank you so much, Yosef, for joining us here today. You've been listening to Leap of Faith. I'm Penina Taylor, and I'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to be in touch with me, you can email me at penina@israelnewstalkradio.com. That's P-E-N-I-N-A @israelnewstalkradio.com. Thanks for being with me today, and I'll see you next time when we take a leap of faith together here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.